Welcome all of you to this beautiful seminar, a webinar where we are having Mr. Khera with us, Mr. Shiv Khera and Sister Jenna with us. It is our pleasure to have both of you together. We all will be enjoying this rendezvous between these two persons, one is a spiritual one, one a motivational speaker and a very renowned personality. We all know Mr. Shiv Khera ji. So, introduction of Shiv Khera ji will be given by Sister Jenna, but I would like to introduce Sister Jenna. Sister Dr. Jenna is an acclaimed, trusted spiritual mentor committed to bridging divides in societies and building relationships between global influencers. She has impacted lives around the globe, inspiring change and finding solutions to current day crises as the founder and director of the Brahma Kumaris Meditation Museum, located in the metropolitan Washington DC area in USA. Sister Dr. Jenna is also the host of the popular America Meditating radio show and recipient of the President's Lifetime National Community Service Award. She is a member of the Evolutionary Leaders Circle, a group of thought leaders from diverse disciplines in service to conscious evolution, and was selected by Empower a Billion Women 2020 as one of 100 most influential leaders of 2015. I invite Sister Jenna to introduce Mr. Shiv Khera ji to our session. We all welcome both of you and we look forward to listen both of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Shivika Ben. Om Shanti. You know, all of those introductions seem so small versus when you just introduce somebody as being Om Shanti or being a very peaceful soul. But thank you so much. I'm looking so forward to our conversation with Mr. Shiv Khera. So before we begin our conversation, everyone, I would like to announce that Mr. Shiv Khera has offered his 11 cardinal rules for business success complimentary to all participants who want to download it. The link will be appearing in the chat box towards the end of this great webinar. Also, if you have questions for Mr. Khera, please type them in the chat box and he will address three questions at the end of our delightful conversation. So let me tell you a little bit about Mr. Shiv Khera. He's an author, educator, business consultant, and a much sought after speaker. He inspires, he encourages everyone to realize their true potential. Who doesn't need that in these times? And he has taken his dynamic personal messages to opposite sides of the globe, ranging from the United States to Singapore. His 40 years of research and understanding has put millions on the path of growth and fulfillment. Over 8 million copies of his books have been sold globally, including his international bestseller, You Can Win. His clients include many prominent businesses. Tens of thousands of people have benefited from his dynamic workshops internationally in over 20 countries, and millions have heard him as a keynote speaker. Mr. Khera is also the brand ambassador of the Round Table Foundation, and he has been honored by the Lions International and Rotary International. Now, I would like to take this time to warmly welcome our extremely special distinguished guest, Mr. Shiv Khera. Om Shanti, Mr. Khera, and warm welcome. I can't hear you.
You need to unmute me from okay.
All right. I can hear you loud and clear. Mr. Khera, we're all so excited to have you in this webinar, especially on this very, very special and auspicious time for celebrating and honoring our teachers. The conversation couldn't be more timely. But what I'd like to do is to find a little bit more about you. I want to learn about who you are. I mean, in your earlier days, you worked as a car washer, a life insurance agent, a franchise operator, before becoming a motivational speaker and changing lives. Tell us a little bit about how you began your career in business as a business consultant and motivational speaker.
Well, sister, I want to thank you for the kind words, and I didn't know I could do all the things that you said I could. But anyway, let's go forward from there. But you see, I put this title of our program as Turn Setbacks into Comebacks, because in my own life, sister, I have had three major setbacks where I went into a minus. Minus means minus. And what helped me come back is what I'm going to share a little bit. I am not that educated. My academics are, I'm a BCom third division. I failed in my 10th. That's my academics. And I come from a business family. We had coal mines in India, close to 1,000 people working. No, I didn't create them, sister. I inherited them. And the government took over, they nationalized. Now, some families had money. Our family did not. Because my father had died when I was just about finishing college. We were left with the liabilities and the assets were gone. And I was married only 4 weeks then. And I remember a year later, my daughter was born. And I sold some of the last piece of my mother's jewelry to get released from the hospital. I did not have 10 bucks to buy mate that night. Now, I tried my hands on three businesses with no money and I failed in all three. Finally, November 13, 1975, I left India, went to U.S., initially went to Toronto, and started life with a bucket in my hand, washing cars door to door. For about a year and a half, I was washing on the streets. Thereafter, totally by accident, I got into selling life insurance, which in my opinion, Sister Jenna, was the best thing that ever happened to me in my life.
Tell me.
And we teach today our kids in schools and colleges everywhere the two words only. And the two words are succeed and win, succeed and win, and succeed and win. And we never teach them in life. Life always does not go up, 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 up. Life is a roller coaster. It goes up and down. Yes, no. True? It goes up and down. And since we have not taught them how to face a downtrend in life, we've only taught them how to succeed and win. And when a downturn comes, when a failure comes, and since they're not prepared, they don't know how to face a failure, you know what happens today? They get depressed. They go on drugs, they commit suicide. They don't know how to fail. Sister, it is so crucial today that we must learn how to fail in life. Because we're not living in a fancy world that life only does not always go up, 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 up. It's a real world. It's not a fantasy. And after I joined selling life insurance, within 90 days, my manager called me right back to fire me for non-performance. And now, what was the turning point in my life? Sister, I attended a program by Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, the man who wrote the book Power of Positive Thinking. I sat as a student. And that was the first time in my life I realized one thing, that till then, I kept blaming the whole world for my failure, not realizing that I was my own biggest problem.
That's something. I mean, that happens to us. But isn't that what sometimes failure does, Dr. Kidder? It's like it actually takes you to something that you're missing. It's like when you fail, I mean, this is such a law, isn't it? When you fail, you find yourself discovering something that you missed that's helping you to get to another dimension.
And you see, that's the time I realized that I kept blaming the whole world for my failure, not realizing that I was my own biggest problem. Nothing changed outside. Something changed inside, and the direction in my life changed. And then I got into three businesses. I bought out a company out of California in 1984, started the New Jersey operation with no clients, and I sold my company with close to 500 clients for a decent sum. Now, this is my last 46 years in 5 minutes. And the lessons that I learned during this period is really what taught me quite a few things. And with the crisis today, it's covering up the whole world. And because of that, there is a lot of uncertainty today because nobody can predict a finish line to this crisis. Sister, are you with me? Nobody is able to predict a finish line to it. Therefore, it is causing a lot of insecurity. And that insecurity is leading to what? Stress, anxiety, frustration, depression, and even anger. Now, all I can say one thing, sister, is, and that is, stress is both normal and natural. Anybody who says they don't have stress, they belong to the lunatic asylum. And all stress is not bad. In fact, the athlete at the Olympics, is he under stress? Answer is yes. Now, sister, the only example that I can think of really, which in my opinion sits right for stress is, folks, all of us must have either in movies or in real life gone to the race course and seen the thoroughbreds. You know, when the thoroughbreds are being taken into the cabin, sister, they don't walk casually relaxed. They are jumping like this. You know why? They're under very heavy stress. And
But also, wouldn't you say also, Mr. Keda, they have a lot of potential?
Oh, yeah, I'm just going
And that potential is like kicking in them, you know, like, come on, I want to live it.
Yeah, and the moment they put into the cabin and then the bell rings, guess what happens? They shoot and they perform. Now, that's a thoroughbred. But if you take a jackass to the race course, jackass walks so relaxed, comfortably. He's walking so relaxed and comfortably. He's not jumping like the thoroughbred. But then for the rest of his life, he will remain a jackass and he will never perform like the thoroughbred. Now, sister, this statement is very important. Stress is the price we pay to be a thoroughbred in life. I repeat one more time. Stress is the price we pay to be a thoroughbred in life. Now, all of us can handle stress. What we cannot handle is chronic stress. Sister, I repeat one more time. All of us can handle stress. What we cannot handle is chronic stress. When stress becomes chronic, that is the time we start breaking down. Are you with me, sister? Hello?
Mm-hmm. I am.
See, that is the time we start breaking down. Now, all I can say is one thing, that let us not overrate this crisis and let us not underrate our strength to fight and win.
Yeah. Let
us not overrate this crisis and let us not underrate our strength to fight and win. Now, go ahead, you want to say something?
Yeah, at times, and it's a question that I'm asking you for some answers. Sometimes, do you think our stress, though, Mr. Keda, is related to a little touch of our ego? And is that kind of ego still healthy? Because let's say in my spiritual path, I want to be so peaceful in doing everything. I want to be a thoroughbred inside of the gate before the gate opens up and I run. And I want to be able to bring that grace and power and dynamic energy into whatever I'm doing. But if I'm really like anxious all the time, is that feeding an element of the ego which can sometimes deceive me?
Sister, with your permission, may I share with you something which changed my life and
yes,
that might be an answer to the question that you just asked. So may I, with your permission?
Please.
You see, about 45 years ago, in New York, I attended a program by Dr. Norman Vincent Peale. There were about 1,000 people. I was one of them. And Dr. Peale came up to the dais, looked at everybody, and sister, Dr. Peale's height was 5'1", 5'1", or 5'2". Short guy. He was about 85 or 90 years old at that time when he came up there. And see, that day, looking at Dr. Peale with only 5 feet height, with the confidence that he had and the humility he had, confidence and humility he had, that day I changed the definition of height. You never measure a person's height neck down. You always measure a person's height neck up. Sister, are you with me? You never measure a person's height neck down. Measure it neck up. Now, he looked at the audience and said, "You people appear so cool, calm. It appears nobody has a problem here." So he asked, "Does anybody have a problem here?" Now, who doesn't have it? So everybody raised their hand. We all have problems. Then he asked, "How many people would like to get rid of their problems?" Again, everybody raised their hand. Then Dr. Peale said, "While I was coming here, I came across a place 2 blocks away from here where I saw some people lying down, all comfortable, totally relaxed. They had no problem whatsoever. How many people would like to know where that place is?" Again, everybody raised their hand. And Dr. Peale said, "2 blocks away from here, there is a cemetery. There are people lying there, fleshed out, relaxed. Comfortably, they have no problem whatsoever." And he asked, "How many people would like to get rid of their problem?" Nobody raised their hand. Everybody put their hand in their pocket. And then Dr. Peale said one thing that day. He gave a prayer, which is called the Serenity Prayer. He said, "Problem is a sign of life. So long as we are alive, we shall have problems. The day we don't have problems, we'd be dead. And when you're running short of problems, watch out. That's the time to get on your knees and pray to God. If you stop trusting me anymore, send me some problems." And that day he gave a prayer, which is called the Serenity Prayer. And it goes this way. "God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, and courage to change the things that I can, and wisdom to know the difference what I can and what I cannot." Now, in my opinion, it is the gist of life. And for the past 45 years, I have never left my home without my prayer, and I've come across many adversities. Now, if you analyze and dissect this little prayer, "God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change." Now, my question to you is, sister, can we change everything in this world to suit ourselves? No. Can we mold everything to our convenience? Answer is no. There are many things beyond us, such as, I didn't choose my parents, neither did you. I didn't decide where I was going to be born, neither did you. If this is my height and the color of my skin, there's nothing I can do. And granted, sometimes people are born deformed. And sometimes bad things do happen to good people for no fault of their own. What wrong did they do? Who knows? So it says, "What I cannot change, let me accept it graciously, not grudgingly." Because many times in life, we keep fighting the things we just cannot change, and we bring stress into our lives, and we become paralyzed, and we become unproductive.
Very true. Now,
if I cannot change, let me accept it graciously. If I can change, then give me the guts to do it and wisdom to know what I can, what I cannot. Now, when I wrote my book, I'll be happy to send you one book, You Can Achieve More. When I wrote my book, which was launched in London a few years ago, I took this thought 2 steps forward, and I wrote in there that life is full of choices and life is full of compromises. Now, it seems like a contradiction, but not really. See, how is life full of choices, sister? If I ill-treat you, I have chosen to be ill-treated, haven't I? If I treat you with discourtesy, I've chosen to be treated with discourtesy, haven't I? If I light up a cigarette, I've chosen to invite cancer, haven't I? And if I drink and drive, I've chosen to invite an accident, haven't I? And if I exercise every day, I've chosen to invite good health, haven't I? And if I eat too much every day, I've chosen to be obese, haven't I? Now hear this. If I tell lies, I have chosen to lose my credibility, haven't I? And if I tell the truth, I have chosen to be a credible person, haven't I? See, life is full of choices. But we are all free to the point of choice. But after we make our choices, the choice controls the chooser. We have no more choice.
Very powerful, Mr. Keda.
We're all free to the point of choice, sister.
Yeah, it's very powerful. And you know what? As you are sharing that point, and I'm sure everyone must be thinking so much, everyone out there, you must be enjoying the Ganges of wisdom coming from Mr. Shiv Keda today. And one of the things, and I don't know if you all picked it up, but one of the things in your serenity prayer, you know, grant me the courage or the things that I cannot change. You know, I was just thinking as you were saying, I have a choice to smoke a cigarette. I have a choice to, you know, get up in the mornings. I have a choice to do that. Why is it that sometimes, even though we do have choice, why aren't we able to change some of those behaviors or habits that we sense are not good for us, because it is creating our setbacks, isn't it?
Okay. Let me just finish 1 minute, the last thought, then I'll answer this one question. Knowing fully well that something is wrong, we still go ahead and do it. Why is that? Knowing fully well. Now, let me share with you this example. I was talking of how is life full of compromises. See, in life, we cannot choose the cards that are dealt to us. What we can choose is how we play the game. Now, once the press people asked me one question, and the question was, Mr. Keda, people who succeed in life, don't they make mistakes? And people who fail, don't they do positive things in life? And my answer is that people who succeed, they do make mistakes. But remember, making a mistake once in a while does not bring failure. Repeating the same mistake again and again is what brings failure. And doing something positive once in a while does not bring success. Repeating the same positive behavior again and again is what brings success. Now, to answer your question, the second one, with your permission, I need 2 minutes because I will go on two separate areas. You said when people know something is not good for them, why do they still do it? And why don't they?
We were talking about the power of choice. And then there's a part in the Serenity Prayer that says, give me the courage for the things I can't change. What's that dynamic there that we're not able to change, making a choice anymore in my life?
Okay. See, we have this little quote which says, winners don't do different things. They do things differently. And sister, invariably, I'm asked by people, what do they do differently? And my answer is, winners form the habit of doing things losers don't like to do. And what are the things losers don't like to do? They're the same things winners don't like to do either, but they do it anyway. See, losers don't like to get up in the morning. Sister, Winners don't like to get up in the morning either, but they get up anyway. See, losers don't like to work hard. Winners don't like to work hard either, but they work hard anyway. See, winners form the habit of doing things losers don't like to do, and they're the same things. Now, why am I sharing this with you? If we have to think to do the right thing, we can never do it right. I repeat, if we have to think to do the right thing, we can never do it right. It must come automatic. It must become a reflex action. How many times have you heard, sister, people saying like this, this guy is just lucky. Every time he touches dirt becomes gold. And this guy is just unlucky. Every time he touches gold becomes dirt. Now, there's a lot of truth in this statement. You know why I say that? The person we call lucky analyzed their life, analyze every transaction in the life, and you will find the positive behavior has become habitual. Every time they do it right. It happens right because the reflexes are moving right. And the person we call unlucky analyze their life and transaction in their life, and you will find the negative behavior has become habitual. Every time they do it wrong because the reflexes are moving wrong. Now, why am I sharing this? When we were kids, I don't care how old you and I are, when we were growing up, our parents said one thing, form good habits and habits form characters. Form good habits and habits form characters. Because 90% of our behavior is what? Habitual. We don't think, we just act. And if we have positive habits, we are a positive character. And if we have negative habits, we are a negative character. And good habits, sister, are hard to come by, but they're easy to live with. Bad habits come easy, but they're hard to live with. And before we got the habits got us. Are you with me?
Yes.
Before we got the habits got us.
Yeah.
We are creatures of habits. Now, when you say choices, you see, remember in life, anything and everything we do, we make a choice. They are reflecting, they are driven by only two principles in life, which is called the pain and pleasure principle. Anything and everything do in life we do either to avoid a pain or to gain a pleasure. Go check out whatever you do in Brahm Kumari today, I do in my life. We are all doing for one of the two reasons, either to gain a pleasure or to avoid a pain. Now, the example I share with you, people who smoke, they know it is bad. The family knows, they tell them, the doctor says it, PAC says it, nobody has to say it, they cough. But you tell them it's bad. You know what their answer is? I know it is bad, but I enjoy it. It relaxes me. You know what are they saying? The pleasure is too great.
Yeah.
How long?
The pleasure is greater than the wisdom, huh?
Till how long? Till they have a shooting pain in their body. They go to the doctor, and the doctor says, buddy, you got cancer. If you want to see daylight tomorrow, you better stop it now. And he stops. Why? Because now the pain is more than the pleasure. He stops it. What happened? Because now the pain is more than the pleasure. Same thing is true in our lives. See, there are people who are honest. They get tremendous pleasure out of honesty. They continue. And see, there are spiritual things you do. Why? You feel happy. There is so much of pleasure you get out of it. We do it for that pleasure. You feel internally good. So if everything eventually boils down to this, everything in life, no matter what.
So let's go on to your successes, because in your work, you talk about the six C's of success. Since we're on this beautiful track, I mean, how do you define success, and what are the 6 C's of success? We're at a time where the economy is uncertain because of the pandemic, and people are concerned about their ability to survive, even to succeed. Can you share the 6 C's that you talk so much about in regards to moving towards a life of success?
Okay. Sister, I would need a little extra time on that, but let me share with you. In fact, how much time do we have total anyway? I mean,
We have together, me and you, about maybe another 10 to 15 minutes, and then there'll be questions from our beautiful audience.
Okay. All right. Then give me about 4 to 5 minutes to answer this, because, see, I'm not going to go by all the 6 C's, but I'm going to cover some steps that we talk in terms of overcoming stress or prepare to succeed in life. What is preparation? It is preparation eventually. See, one is the serenity prayer, which I just shared with you. And the second thing is, sister, is we need to learn to convert downtime to uptime. We need to learn to convert downtime to uptime. What does that mean? See, there was a survey conducted in the U.S. which said an average American watches 3 to 4 hours of TV per day. Now, that's not an average American. Average European, Australian, Indian, everybody. And that, by the way, this survey was conducted before the crisis, before the pandemic. Right now, sister, there are people watching 8-10 hours of TV per day. That's true. Now, a man went to his friend who used to watch 4 hours of TV per day, and he asked him, how much did this TV cost you? So the friend replied, cost me $1,000. He said, my friend, you don't know how to calculate the money value of your time. He said, what do you mean? He said, well, how much money do you make a year? He said, I make $100,000 per year. And he said, how many hours do you work a year? He said, 2,000 hours per year. He said, that makes it $50 an hour. Your time is worth $50 an hour. And you watch 4 hours of TV per day, which is 50 multiplied with 4, that's $200 per day. And you watch 365 days a year, multiply the 365, that comes to close to $100,000 per year. And he said, did you ever realize that is more than your EMI on $1 million home? Did you ever realize that is more than your EMI on $1 million home, $100,000? He said, you don't know how to calculate money value of your time. Now, don't get me wrong.
Hello?
You watch TV, it's nice, good movies, and so on. But watching 4 hours per day, sister, what are we doing? We're wasting our lives. But now comes to the second part. There was another survey, which I have mentioned in my book.
Maybe...
Sister, can you hear me? Sister, can you hear me? I can't hear you. Sister, can you hear me?
Hello, Sister Jenna.
Sister, can you hear me? Sister Jenna, can you hear me?
Maybe her Bluetooth is discharged.
Yeah, Sister Jenna?
Sister Jenna, can you hear me?
Yeah, is our voice audible?
I can hear you, but I don't know if Sister Jenna can hear me. Sister, can you hear me?
Yep.
I can't hear you, sister.
Hello? Yes, I can now. I've got you back.
Okay, good.
Okay.
let me pick up from the next part here. In my book, I have also mentioned one more thing. A survey was conducted which said that 85% of millionaires and billionaires in the world today are first generation. I repeat, 85% of millionaires and billionaires are first generation. Only 15% are coming from inheritance. And they were asked one question. How did you achieve so much financial success in such a short time? And their answer was, we read books. How many books? About 50 books a year. 50 books a year means one book a week. One book a week. And if you Google Sister Jenna on Warren Buffett, this guy reads about 6 to 8 hours per day. Per day. And Bill Gates is an avid reader. And they were asked, what kind of books do you read? And the answer was, we don't read fiction, because fiction will remain fiction. We only read self-help books. Why? Because their answer was, one good idea is worth $1 million. One good idea is worth $1 million. And tell me, how many ideas do we need to succeed in life? Only one. That's all. And I find one more thing, sister, that people who are serious readers, they never borrow or lend books. Never, 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 never. Because many times people tell me, Mr. Kera, I got a great book. I can lend it to you. I said, don't. Either give it to me, gift it to me, sell it to me. Why? I won't give it back to you. Why? Because when I read a book, I always underline and make notes. Why? Because when I reread the book, I can't read the whole thing. I only read my notes. Because I learned one thing. Reading a good book once is not good enough. There are books I've read 6, 7, 8 times. And there are people who say, I've read a book once. I said, you wasted your time and money too. You haven't got anything out of it. You see, Arrow Computers is a client of ours, $26 billion company in U.S. They celebrated a bumper quarter during this pandemic. And I asked their managing director, I said, how did you achieve so much success during this crisis? And his answer was, he said, we bought hundreds of your books, You Can Win, and the other books. And he said, everybody in my company, we read your book every year. It is a ritual in our company. And he said, Mr. Kera, if you ever forget a paragraph in your own book, call me, I'll tell you where it is. I know your book by heart. No wonder these people are implementing all these things. Now, why did I share this with you? See, sister, during this pandemic, if we have not upskilled ourselves or become more knowledgeable or become healthy and fitter, we cannot blame that we had no time. Now, this lockdown came in March. I did my first webinar 8th of April. Now, till 8th of April, I was learning to do SMS for my grandchildren. In my life, Sister Jenna, I had never done an email. I never did my email. I didn't know how to open a computer. Now, I'm not an expert even now, but you know something? I've learned how to use the computer. And since April of last year to now, this program that I'm doing for you, this is my 170th program. And by the way, many programs, we are paid for it by Pricewaterhouse, Deloitte, all these guys, they pay us for it. It opened totally a new avenue of business. So what have I done? I have upskilled myself during this pandemic, one. Two, I used to read 30, 40 books a year earlier. I stopped the habit. I went back, picked up my books. And right now, today, I spend 2 to 3 hours per day reading a good book or listening to a good motivational videos from the YouTube. And three, barring this last 6 months where I had pneumonia, prior to that, I lost 6 kilos of weight. I was exercising every day and I'm feeling healthy and fitter. Now, let me ask you.
Good to hear. I mean, I think you, No, I was just thinking that the steps that you've just offered all of us are good steps for comebacks. Because if you waste your time, the analogy you gave about how much time you sit in front of a television just watching something that doesn't inspire you, it doesn't empower you. I mean, come on. When are we going to wake up, Mr. Keda, and realize how much capacity and potential is in the soul? And I think that this particular period that we're all in, perhaps if we're open to recognizing our capacity and potential, we can do amazing things. Look, you said you didn't even work an email or a laptop until the pandemic. And look what you're doing now, right? Over 100 shows. That's incredible. That's incredible.
And several million people have heard me, which I couldn't reach out before. So it's totally opened up a new avenue for me.
Wonderful. So based on your many years, right, of experience, and you had mentioned in our conversation that winners don't do things like different things. They do things differently. And I love that. And I think that will help many of us to recognize that it's okay to be different. But what would you say is one of the main virtues or values that we can put into our lives to keep moving forward, to keep feeling that we're winning in life, even if it's a roller coaster ride, but we're moving forward, we're learning, we're growing, we're creating something new. What's the main virtue or value you think you've taken in your own life, or the main virtue and value you think we should take in our lives to keep moving forward?
Well, two things. One is building strong relationships. And two, accepting responsibility. Now, let me share one at a time. Building strong relationships. See, our biggest asset in life is not our bank balance. It is our relationship balance. And we notice one thing, that people who have good relationships, what they can achieve with one phone call, you cannot achieve with $1 million. Are you with me? People who have good relationships, what they can achieve with one phone call, you cannot achieve with $1 million. Now, when we talk of relationships, we talk of personal, professional, and social relationships. Now, I do programs in 20 different countries and address many business schools in different parts of the world. And in colleges today, in business schools, Sister Jenna, what they're teaching is networking. They say, go join Chamber of Commerce, Rotaries, the Lions, and go network. And you ask these young kids, MBAs coming out, and they say, what are you doing? They say, I'm networking. Now, why are you networking? I'm building contacts. Now, why are you building contacts? Well, I'm building contacts because someday he could be useful. He's a doctor, he's a lawyer, he's a cop, he's a this, he's a that, he's a politician. Someday he could be useful. Now, look at this, sister. You see, usefulness goes, friendship also goes. Now, they have never been taught the difference between, there's a big difference between building contacts versus building relationships. Are you with me? There's a huge difference between building contacts versus building relationships. Now, we have an office in Singapore, and one evening I came from dinner and a man met me in the lobby and he asked me, Mr. Keda, you came from dinner? I said, yeah. And he asked me, did you meet some people? I said, yes. And his first thing was, sister, he said to me, I hope you met some people who could be useful to you. You know, I felt like giving him a piece of my mind. His only criteria of meeting people was usefulness. What he could extract out of them.
Yeah.
he didn't understand one thing, that meeting good people in life is good enough. And usefulness is a byproduct of relationships. I repeat one more time. Meeting good people in life is good enough, but usefulness is a byproduct of relationship. Now, example. I have a friend of 20 years, and tonight if he has a problem, who's the most natural person he will go for help? Friend of 20 years, he's not going to make new friends. Is it my duty to help? Answer is yes. Remember, helping a friend is a duty of a friend. It is never the purpose of friendship. Why? Because if it is a purpose, purpose finishes, friendship finishes. It is always incidental to friendship, never the purpose of friendship. Now, what builds good relationships? Sister, I've heard many, many preachers also talk like this. They say you should be very tolerant. You hear the word tolerance. And tolerance in many people's vocabulary is a good word. In my vocabulary, it's not. Let me share with you what I would replace it with. I would replace it with the word mutual respect. See, I and my wife live together not because we can tolerate each other. We live together because we respect each other. The day respect for each other is not there, we cannot live together.
Hear, hear. So true.
You see, if we live together only because we can tolerate each other, it only means we are postponing the blast. Same thing, employers and employees work together long term, not because they can tolerate each other, because they respect each other. And we need to learn to understand that relationships are not built on only taking, taking, taking. That's a parasite. That's a parasite. We need to learn to add a value addition to another person's life. I repeat, we need to learn to add a value addition to another person's life.
Beautiful.
And that takes giving in life.
Beautiful, beautiful. Mr. Keter, you've been offering so much wisdom to us. It's been mind-opening, soul-awakening, and we've got a few folks that are on that are just dying to ask you a personal question to help them on their journey. And I would like to call in Shapira Arora, if she's available, if she can ask Mr. Kara her question.
Yeah, Shapira Arora, I think you wrote something in the chat box. You have a question to ask Mr. Shiv Kara.
Okay, we can move on maybe to...
Yeah, yes, ma'am, I'm available.
Oh, yes. Okay, Shapira, welcome, welcome.
Okay.
Yeah, what is your question? All.
Yeah, my question is basically I'm a teacher by profession, and in my day-to-day working scenario, when many times students disobey and they argue back these days, so I feel very disappointed and many times feel angry. So I want to know that how to manage this type of issues in day-to-day working?
Well, the only thing I can say is that I'm invited many times to schools and colleges, and many times parents tell me, talk to our kids. The values are messed up. Discipline is messed up. This is what parents tell me, talk to my kids. And my answer to them is, it's not the kids who are messed up today. No. It's the parents who are messed up. And that is sad. Tell me, where are the kids learning from? They're learning from their parents. And for the first 5 years, Shapira, hear this. For the first 5 years of a child's life, parent is the only teacher. Are you with me? For the first 5 years of their life, a parent is the only teacher. And there's a study done by Stanford, which is called the Marshmallow Study. I'm sure you must have heard of it. that a child's attitude, 90% of a child's attitude is developed by the time they are 4 years of age. And 90% of the values are developed by the time they are 14 years of age. Now, if you Google, go check out something called the Marshmallow Study at Stanford. It's amazing. And I grant you one thing, that parenting today is become a much bigger challenge than it used to be earlier, because we never had those exposures in life earlier. And it has become a much, much, much difficult situation. But go look at guys like Bill Gates. I was reading on this guy. You know, Bill Gates has not given any mobile phone and technology and computer to his kids till the age of 12. He never did. A guy who runs a computer company, he didn't let his kids play with the mobiles and the computers till the age of 12. How do you like that? So, I mean, we have to start understanding today. You see, we have no parents today. The only parent is the mobile. And even at the dining table, have you noticed four people go out for dinner and they order their dishes? And, you know, after they've ordered the place, the orders, each one is on their what? On the mobile. And after half an hour, they have their meals. Nobody speaks to each other in half an hour. And they say, I had a great meal. Let's go home. You know something? The world has become so insecure today. You got 1,000 friends on Facebook, not one in real life. No wonder kids are committing suicide. They're taking drugs. They don't listen. They are feeling so insecure today. They are feeling insecure. And this is where, in fact, we are planning to start out a program next year on positive parenting, positive parenting. So parenting is a clarity contest. And let me share with you one thing. You see, today's parents are actually scared of their kids. Sister Jenna, today's parents are scared of their kids.
I know.
You see, they don't have the guts to say no to their kids. They don't have the guts to say, our parents, when we asked them, can I go to the movies? They said no. And we didn't have the guts to ask a second time.
So hear what? So as we look at navigating during these times, and Sister Aura, thank you so much for the question, Shapira. And I know what it must be like to have to be an educator for children of this generation, but I can guarantee you, you are there and you have the power and the strength to show a very good example. I want to call on Asmira, Asmina Mishra, who has another question for you, Mr. Kira. And if you can keep the answer brief because we're coming to a close, it would be wonderful. Are you there?
A tough one.
Ashna Mishra, are you there? Do you have a question for
Mr.
Kira? Hello, welcome, sister. What's your question for Mr. Kira?
Yes, ma'am. Ma'am, as sir, good evening, sir. Am I audible?
Yes, ma'am.
Sir, as you have emphasized a lot on reading habits of the self-help books and other book of a particular genre, but sir, we remain engaged with our curriculum books. So how we can develop that habit of reading self-help books or that habit of engage in reading?
Great question, Mr. Kera. Great question, huh?
Yeah, it is a great question. Now, I'm not going to directly answer that question. I'm going to deviate a little bit. So kindly forgive me, because many people ask me, Asna, that people listen to your program, they read your book, they go to your workshops, and after a while they're there, they get all charged up, motivated. But when they go out, motivation dies. So my answer to them is, see, an athlete, when they keep practicing, what do? They develop a stamina. They build muscles and develop stamina, right? And when they stop it, tell me, Asana, what happens to the stamina? Eat. Does it remain same or goes down? It goes down.
It goes down.
Okay. Now, same thing is true in our life. Just the way our bodies need food every day, our minds need positive thoughts every day. Now, if you feed your body with junk food, what will happen? You'll fall sick. Similarly, our mind just does not need thoughts, it needs positive thoughts. Otherwise, we become mentally sick. Now, you see, motivation is like fire. Unless you keep adding fuel, it dies. And many times people ask me, Mr. Kira, do you also get demotivated? And my answer is, yes, I do. And when I get demotivated, what do? I read my books. I come back. You recharge yourself. Go ask Sister Jana and Sister Chevika here. I bet they do their meditation on a daily basis. Am I right, ma'am?
Yeah.
They do the meditation. And I will tell you, stop doing it for 3 months. They will not be the same people. Go ask them.
Very true.
Sisters will not be the same sisters here that you are seeing right now. You know something? Willpower, we depend on willpower. Remember one thing. Willpower will only take you so far, no more. Willpower is like a battery. You have to recharge your battery every time. You need to recharge. Battery dies. See, when you drive a car, you get your tank full. Do you wait for the tank to get empty before you get a refill? No. You get it done before it gets empty. Similarly, our willpower, you recharge before it gets empty. Similarly, motivation, recharge before you get empty. Are you with me?
Yeah, it's a beautiful answer, Mr. Kira. It's really great. We have to move on to our next person that has a question because we're coming to a close. I hope that was a good answer for you, Asana. It was a great question. Thank you so much for that. That was perfect. That was perfect. All right, we've got one more lucky, amazing, fortunate soul to ask Mr. Shiv Kheda the last question. Amira Bashi, are you there?
Can you repeat the name?
Or maybe Nileshwari, perhaps?
Nileshwari we can take.
Nileshwari, are you there? You can ask Mr. Kira.
He just left, I think.
Okay.
You can repeat the last name.
Amira Bashi.
Amira Bashi. Double A-M-A-I-R-A. Amira Bashi.
No.
Okay, so no problem. Look, we have gone through some important information. Hasn't everyone enjoyed the sharings from Mr. Shiv Kira? I mean, it's been incredible, all the tools and the gifts and the steps that we can take to make our comebacks. I mean, it's time to make a comeback. We can't allow a pandemic, we can't allow a relationship, we can't allow our financial insecurities or instabilities, or maybe a health crisis, to really make us go, oh my gosh, this is it, my life is done, there's nothing we can do. No, no, no. Mr. Shiv Kheda has come from such a humble beginning, and look at what he has done with his life and how many people he has actually implemented. So, you know, Mr. Kheda, as we move to the close, any final remarks that you'd like to make? And I think it's important that you definitely leave us with a website that everybody who is tuned in can at least learn a little bit more about your work.
Well, with your permission, if I can just say one thing, especially a lot of audience is Indian audience today. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
Mention one thing, that there was a beautiful article that came out. It's an article here. This article, it says, if you can read this, it says the word is superstition. The word is superstition here. And this is an article that came out in India Today in January issue. Sister, do I have about 3 minutes? Would that be okay?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
If not, then I might not as well start it. I can skip it. But I'll just call it off then. Because it'll take me about 3 to 4 minutes. So, well, I want to thank you for inviting me. I'm grateful. And I look forward to interacting with you in the future. God bless.
Mr. Shiv Kheda, did you leave us with your website?
I'm sorry?
Did you leave us with your website? Did you give us your website address?
It's www.shivkheda.com.
Okay, great. I just wanted to make sure that that was in there. So everyone, I hope you've enjoyed the intoxicating, riveting conversation with Mr. Shiv Kheda. And there was such a special conversation. Wasn't it, Mr. Kheda? Didn't we enjoy having our time together today?
I loved it, man.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too.
We
I know
can
I did.
We can announce
yes.
Three.
In addition to Mr. Kheda's 11 cardinal rules for business success, he has been kind and generous enough to offer 3 complimentary books to winners who entered the quiz contest this morning. And the winners are as follows: Indu Wadwa from Karnal. Congratulations, Indu. Sunita Sinha from Delhi. And Kriti Kamal from Patna. Congratulations. I'm sure you're going to enjoy that book, and I'm sure it'll change your life. Sister Shavika, thank you for having me host this wonderful, riveting conversation. I will let you follow up with sending the books, and again, congratulations. So in closing, I would like to thank again Mr. Shiv Kheda for having everything so beautifully done and offered and delighted and inspiring, and I wish you continued success, and I wish you a great deal of Om Shanti, Om Shanti, Om Shanti. Now I'll turn it over to Sister Shavika.
I look forward to seeing you when you see. I'll give you a call.
Absolutely. Sure. All the best. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. Thank you so much, Mr. Shiv Kheda ji. We invite you to come here to our world headquarters in Mount Abu. Very yes. Soon we want to meet personally, and yes. It's going to be our pleasure and privilege that you come and visit this place. I don't know if you have been to Mount Abu before, but it's a beautiful place.
I have been there. I was dressed about 15-20 years ago, a large gathering there. It was big one.
Okay.
Quite a few thousand people, but it's been a long time now, but I'd love to visit. Thank you. Grateful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. God bless.